You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. Welcome to the podcast after a very long break through the peak of the summer season. I'm here with my lovely wife, Monica, and we're going to podcast together. And we are starting out with a new segment. And this is kind of really important to us, and it's called Success Through Action. So why don't we talk about kind of what this segment's going to be about today.
Okay.
So you know, in the future as we do this each time, we'll kind of give you an idea of the types of things that we'll be talking about.
Yeah, so I mean, some of the things that this segment is going to be about is basically it's going to help hopefully motivate people out there to start getting moving in your lives, to start setting goals and figuring out what you want and taking action to move you toward that.
Right. So being more productive and obtaining success.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess it's important. Now let's talk about the definition of success.
Okay. Well, success, I think, to everybody means different things. To some people, success may mean getting debt-free with their mortgage or with their cars. Maybe they need a new car.
Right.
And, you know, maybe success is selling everything and going to another country to be a missionary.
Right. Success might mean a particular goal, like maybe you want to become self-sufficient in meat, milk, and eggs on a homestead. Or say you want to transition from being an employee to being a small business owner and being able to support your family.
Yeah. Those would be great goals. And again, for different people, success means different things. And so when we talk about success here, we're not saying, oh, it means you're going to be a millionaire or, you know, it's all about finances. What we're saying is we want to help you define success for yourself and then achieve that success in your life.
Right. And, you know, at the same time, you know, there's nothing wrong with monetary goals.
No.
You certainly have monetary goals. And if your goal is to make $100,000 a year or $1 million a year, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, we live in a world that's governed by money. I mean, you can't do anything without money.
To a degree. Now, at the same time, we will absolutely be talking about maintaining balance.
Yes.
You know, so you should have goals in all the major areas, as opposed to just financial or
business,
career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like family,
yeah.
Physical health.
You know, spiritual goals.
All of those things, because every single facet of life affects the others.
Right. So a major key is maintaining that balance. Now, of course, we're also going to be heavily talking about overcoming those things that generally stop us from achieving our goals, achieving success. And probably the main one is fear.
Fear. Fear of different things. Fear of failure. Fear of rejection.
Right. And, you know, another one is the comfort zone.
Yeah.
Right? We all want to maintain our comfort zone, but the reality is that our comfort zones are below what we really want.
Correct. Yeah, most of the time we just are kind of settling. We're settled in here. It's going along well. It's not great, but it's not terrible. So we just don't feel motivated to move.
Right. And, you know, hence the idea of like, I need to get out of my comfort zone. You know, people say that, but they don't really think about it. They don't think about the fact that, oh, yeah, my comfort zone is below what I really want.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would just end up being stuck in that comfort zone.
Yeah.
Or below it, you know, and what we really need to do is recognize that and be shooting for something more.
Correct.
That is definitely a change to our format and success through action. And we feel very strongly about it. We're both passionate about it. And we want to help people to be able to achieve their goals. So let's shift a little bit. Let's talk about we have some workshops coming up.
Yep. We have one upcoming workshop this Saturday. It's not too late to sign up.
No.
This one's the Introduction to Homesteading.
August.
Mm-hmm. Introduction to Homesteading. And we're going to cover a lot of different subjects. Like,
yeah, we talk about important things like why you want to homestead in the first place. It's really important to understand that almost with any endeavor, because, you know, things get really hard.
Right.
And if you don't have a strong why, or at least understand why you're doing what you're doing, it's easy to give up.
Right. What is your motivation? Because eventually the difficulties will come. And if you just remind yourself of this is why I'm doing it, it's a lot easier to get through those difficult times and days and struggles.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, we talk about many other aspects. We talk about livestock, you know, how to choose livestock. We talk about
how to choose land.
How to choose land. And we, you know, we discuss, you know, the kind of the methodology of homesteading. Of course, we approach it from a permaculture and a preparedness type perspective.
Yeah. And I think that's really what sets us apart from other homesteading workshops and other homesteading things that you might be reading out there, even small farming and things, is that we are approaching it from a completely different viewpoint. Permaculture is a fairly new agricultural movement. And
sure.
A
I mean,
lot
as
of
far
people,
as gaining strength, it's been around for a while.
It's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
It just hasn't been a popularly held
And it's gaining
strategy.
Some popularity.
Yeah, and it's because it makes sense. It really does make sense. And so teaching people how to set up their homesteads from a permaculture point of view, where you can have an increased output with a decreased input and things working synergistically together to really build abundance and self-sufficiency.
Yeah, and you know, all of our workshops are a lot of fun. They really are. We do things. We do a tour where we show how we work each element and how they integrate with one another. We do animal processing demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
We do the milk challenge between cow's milk and goat's milk. And amazingly, people really can't tell the difference. Or we tell them, which one do you like better? And they take these both of these raw milks, and usually they push forward the goat milk.
Yeah, it's been surprising,
it's
actually.
Hilarious. And then, so that's on the 29th of August. And then September 12th. Small animal husbandry and animal processing.
Right. And in that one, I think we're trying to give people a more hands-on training time during the processing rather than just a demonstration.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're going to work each station and then depending on the type of numbers we have for the workshop, they may take their bird through the entire process.
Right. And then they get to leave with a bagged chicken.
Oh yeah. Nice pasture-raised chicken, non-GMO fed. Delicious,
yeah.
You know, and we have ones that are appropriately aged, you know, as fryers. So we're not sending them home with a nice old stew chicken. But that's going to be a lot of fun, too. Those are short. That's a shorter workshop. It's about 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then on September 19th, we're doing a workshop, a 4-hour workshop on establishing guilds and food forests.
Yeah.
And this is another really good one as well. It's basically, you know, just teaching people how they can have these interplantings that work together synergistically. So in a guild, which is a smaller type of interplanting, or a food forest, which is a larger one. You can even think of that as lots of guilds put together to make a food forest.
Right, and we'll show kind of how we're establishing our food forest, and we'll give an example of one of our guilds that we have here that's doing really well this year with all of our herbs and trees.
Yes, so we do some teaching on it, and then we walk around and show them our food forests, our guilds, and then help them hopefully to plan something out for themselves
that
property.
Would make sense for their property and their family's needs.
Yep. Absolutely. So those are exciting workshops we have coming up, and we've got really good feedback, and it's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to move on now to the worldview segment for today, and of course, we'd be remiss if we did not talk about the whole Planned Parenthood situation with abortion and the funding of Planned Parenthood and all the angst going on surrounding this with all the videos being put out. It is an important worldview topic and segment. And, you know, my hat's off to the groups that have been working to expose
mm-hmm.
Planned Parenthood. And, You know, but again, it's real easy to get negative here.
Yeah.
You know, it's real easy to just get doom and gloom and everything else. And what let's talk about what are some of the things that people can do in this situation. Obviously, we would love to see a abortion
completely
get
abolished.
Abolished. You know, we believe that we are made in the image of God, regardless of whether one is a believer or not, and that all life has inherent value and worth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the most innocent among us are those in the womb.
Right.
So obviously that's our stance, and we'd like to see that abolished. But
I have to say something about the exposure of these videos, because I think there's two responses to them. Well, there's more, but I'm saying as far as Christians go, some Christians avoid seeing bad news or bad things because they want to pretend like they don't exist. It's easier to go on in your life not recognizing the needy or the issues or the problems that that are surrounding us, because maybe they don't feel like they have to do something, or maybe they just don't, they want to pretend that the world is a good place. I don't know. And the second response is almost hateful or hurtful to those around. And so I think there needs to, like we were talking about, there needs to be a response of Christians. We have to be able to see that there are bad things in the world. But
yeah,
we can do something, and we can do something positive in our own communities toward decreasing these bad issues. And one of the things we're talking about is what do we do? What is a practical step for Christians in this situation?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. There's some concrete steps that people can and should take. That means doing something. Obviously, it's There's an informational element. You know, we need to expose evil for what it is. And, you know, but getting involved with your community, like you said, for example, pregnancy resource centers,
yeah,
you know, volunteering.
They're always in need,
yeah,
there, not only of actual volunteers and women, mm-hmm, willing to counsel these young women that are coming in who are afraid, but also practical things, diapers and blankets and things for the girls that are keeping their babies, and giving them the resources and the emotional support they need so they're not turning to the abortion clinics.
Right. And I have no problem at all with the political aspect of it. Well, you know, for example, rallying to defund Planned Parenthood. I think that they should be, obviously tax dollars for all Americans should not be going to Planned Parenthood, because many people in our nation, I'd say half, or hopefully even more, would not want to see that. Do find that morally wrong,
mm-hmm,
and therefore our tax dollars shouldn't go towards it.
Right.
And I wouldn't want anyone, I don't care what side of the aisle or side of any issue, to be forced to pay for something they found morally reprehensible.
Correct. And that, you know, that's a great first step. And, you know, we can pray and work diligently toward hopefully making abortion illegal again in the country. But the first step is, let's stop paying for it.
Yeah, yeah. At the very least, we should not have to pay for it. But
yeah,
like you said, you know, there's also pregnancy resource centers and many other ways, reaching out. And of course, reaching out to those that have even had abortions.
Yes.
You know, they're in many cases, they're broken or hardened.
Yes. And Christians, our job is to reach out, to share the gospel, to share the forgiveness of Christ, no matter what you've done, no matter how bad you think you've lived your life, that there's nothing you could do that's beyond the forgiveness of Jesus Christ. And so if we reach out to the women who have had abortions, or even the young women who are considering abortions, and talk with them and really share the love of Christ with them, it will affect the amount of abortions that we're getting in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I feel strongly about concentrating on what you can do and not what you can't do. And what I mean by that is, what can you do now? And it's not saying that, well, then I can't do X, Y, and Z with regards to abortion, for example. But what can you do right now? So instead of lamenting that it's not illegal in the United States, well, what can I do? I can help pregnancy resource centers. I can reach out to individuals. I can work towards defunding Planned Parenthood, etc.
Yeah, I mean, starting small ministries in your church that help single moms or help young pregnant women. I mean, there are positive things that we can do as Christians that will naturally decrease the amount of women that are seeking abortion.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on to our main topic for today, which is essentially a homestead update.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'll talk about, I think I mentioned it early on, is that it's been quite a while since we've podcasted. And, you know, a lot of that is just due to the peak summer period.
Tons of projects, so much going on.
Yes. So we've had a lot going on, and we're just going to cover a few things.
Mm-hmm.
With regards to, you know, what we're doing out here on the homestead. So you want to kick it off for us?
Sure. Early July, I think our biggest time user and the most exciting thing that happened here is that our daughter Ella got married to Isaac.
Yep.
It was a simple wedding, but we had all of our friends and family there, and it was a joyful time. And Sean was able to
officiate
the wedding. So that was really special as well. And
there's that transition that's happening.
Yeah.
It brings up a good point. One of the things that we've talked about is creating a multi-generational legacy
mm-hmm.
here. And that's, you know, passing on a legacy to the next generation. And, you know, we hope that that's one of your goals as well. And currently, we don't know how this will end up, but we're a multifamily polycultural homestead.
Yes.
So, you know, multiple families now exist on this homestead. And of course, Ella and Isaac are eager and they're planning on building their own home here on the property, which is just awesome. That's going to be grand for them to plan over time. But also, we're all working together. You know, we all have, of course, other separate things going on and all of that, but we're also working together on the homestead.
Yep.
So that's cool. Now, after the wedding, we needed a break.
We did.
We needed a break. And after I retired from the Marine Corps, before I retired, we've always talked about taking a nice long trip, even if it was a road trip, just the two of us. You know, so many years in the Marine Corps that we wanted to, you know, kind of slow down and see portions of America. Yeah. You know, we traveled so much, we didn't care about going overseas or anything
and
like that.
And just spend time together. I mean, you know, 24 years in the Marine Corps, we got little pieces here and there, but no real serious, you know, 3 weeks was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we took off.
And I like you still.
And I like you. So we took off on a 3-week road trip, and it was great.
We hit 5 states, Montana. We all went through Utah.
And, of course, Idaho.
Yeah.
And, you know, southern portion of Idaho.
Yeah, southern portion and even up to Boise. And then across Oregon and onto the coast, Washington. And we ended up in the Wenatchee area right when the fires got really bad, so that was an interesting time. But we had a good time camping there with family and then came worked our way back home.
Yeah, so that was great. Saw things like Glacier National Park and some pieces of the Oregon Trail and, lots of good things like that.
It was fun.
So one thing that I want to emphasize here, and this is really important, is right now, the state of Washington and Idaho and Montana is essentially on fire.
Yeah.
And from the time that we hit Wenatchee, we have been in smoke the whole time.
Yeah.
All the way back home, all the way through now, weeks.
Yeah. We can barely see our mountain. There's so much smoke everywhere.
Yeah. And that's, you know, this is a really important topic. And I say that because we had an incident. We actually posted on Facebook when that time came, is that there was a forest fire started from a downed power line very close to our home.
Yeah.
You know, within a quarter mile, probably.
Yeah.
And you know, this is, you know, one of those scenarios, and one of the reasons why we're into preparedness is because it's, you know, it's good to be prepared for these types of emergencies, any type of calamities and situations that arise. But this started, like I said, within a quarter mile from our home. It was quite windy that day, and it's super dry. We're in extreme drought in this area. And it's almost the worst case scenario. And that is, you have to leave your home, and you have to leave your home now. And so Monica and I were away. We were actually in southern Idaho, 8 hours away. And our kids were here, and they had to leave the home now. You know, they did it within about 15 minutes. Okay, and now, because they had 15 minutes, but we didn't know how much time they would have.
Yeah.
You know, if this thing just went the wrong way. And so that brings up, I want to talk about just briefly some preparedness issues. Now, we were blessed in that fire was contained down to 2 to 3 acres. Helicopters and float planes were on it very quickly. The fire departments were on it very quickly. And part of that was we were just coming off what was called the Bayview Fire, which destroyed a lot of acreage and a lot of structures. And so I think that they were just going to get on this really quick, and they did, and they put it out with basically that day, which was we were very fortunate. That could have easily gone a different way.
Yeah, it could have. Unfortunately, when Lindy saw it, they called 911 immediately. They didn't go, oh, I wonder if that's, you know,
right.
They figured it was a fire.
Yes.
And immediately called.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, if you watch our month in the life from July, you'll see some of that. They got a little bit of, they weren't worried about getting footage, but they got a little bit of footage of helicopters dropping water and planes dropping retardant, things like that. So very briefly, this is not a podcast on, you know, preparedness for wildland fire, but I'll just say this, is that you need to be discussing these types of scenarios in your home, and you need to have a plan to be able to leave your house right now. Okay, mm-hmm. It's pretty much the worst case scenario, but do you have a local area that you can go to, that your kids can go to if you're not there, if they have to leave the home right now? And further, do you have an area that you can go to that's outside of, you know, the local area, that's maybe regional instead of local? For example, there's many communities that have had to evacuate due to all these fires.
Right.
You know, and we see it all the time. When fire threatens, people are immediately talking and they're saying, hey, can anybody take my animals? Can anybody do this? That should be hashed out ahead of time. So you should have a plan to take if you have a day warning, you know, can you take all your animals? Can you, you know, get everybody out with all your essentials, and you know where you're going? So that would be a plan. Now, if you had 2 hours, what would you do? You know, maybe it's, you can't get everything out, so you're going to take your priority, obviously people and your essentials, and then your priority animals.
Right.
And then also, you need to be prepared to leave right now and leave the animals. You need to be prepared to do that mentally. You know, a lot of people aren't, you know, a lot of times they'll say, you know, just open up the gates, give them, you know, well, maybe you're pasture land if you have pasture land. And ours happens to be pretty eaten down right now due to drought. That's their best shot. That's the best fire break we have around here. So we told the kids, leave now and leave the animals. Mm-hmm. Now we were worried about that being just eaten up very fast. Fire travels very fast, or it has the ability to. So you have to have those types of plans. And fortunately, we had actually discussed the worst case scenario right before we left.
Yeah.
And this happened 2 days later.
Yeah.
So they reacted quickly, and they got out of there. They were fine, and they went to the local, some friends of ours, immediately.
Which we had a plan. I mean, we had a plan for that. We had fire plans that we've talked about since we moved here, really.
Right.
Where we would meet and how, if the fire is here, this is where you go. If the fire is here, this is where you go.
Right.
If the fire is here, this is where you go.
That's right. We had primary, secondary, and tertiary meeting points. Our primary and secondary meeting points were gone just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's how fast that can happen. So having to leave your home right now for whatever reason is definitely something that you should be prepared for.
Yeah.
Okay, so kind of the next topic or thing that we're working on is, we're in extreme drought here, so water strategies are extremely important to us, and we have implemented multiple water strategies because you should always have multiple elements providing for the same function. Okay, this is a permaculture principle that we incorporate in our homesteading methodology. So we have, our well, of course, and we collect rainwater, and we've built ponds and swales as passive strategies to collect water.
Yeah, and right now it doesn't make sense, because everything's so dry. But this is the perfect time to be doing all of this.
Yes.
Because now we're prepared for when the rain does come.
That's right.
It will come.
Yes.
And the thing is, they're predicting that next summer is going to be just as dry as it is this summer, but by next summer, we'll have had so much rainwater catchment and so much in the swales and so much in the ponds that hopefully there will be less of an impact on our land.
Sure.
Next year.
Absolutely. That's an important aspect. So one of the things we've added in addition to all that is a hand pump for our well.
Yeah.
So
it's very Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah. It is. It's great because, when you live on a well and you lose power, you mm-hmm. lose water, period. Yep. And so, a lot of people will just have, a little bit of water storage.
And we have that too. And we also have a backup generator. Yeah. So it's not like we couldn't keep it going. But what if for some reason the generator went out too?
Sure. And we've had the generator fail on us.
Then we have no access to our water. And with the hand pump, this is guaranteeing access all the time because we can move.
Yeah, and these hand pumps are great. It's not like the old pitcher pumps that you can pull maybe 20 feet or something like that. These hand pumps are high tech, and they can go down really deep. Some of them will advertise all the way down to 300 plus feet. Fortunately, our static level is much higher than that, so we don't have to go down near as deep. But we have a hand pump, so we can get our water without power or anything else. The other thing that we built over the last month and or so,
month and a half, mm-hmm.
is a solar shower and a composting toilet.
Yes.
So in a structure to house this, so it's a two, on one side is the composting toilet, and the other side is the solar shower.
You can see this in the video.
Yeah,
she kind of tours you through because it's a nice looking building.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's attractive.
Yeah,
it's not like going into an outhouse.
Oh yeah, this is not an outhouse. Outhouses are disgusting
and dirty and stinky.
So a dry composting toilet, real quick, is think of a normal looking toilet with a normal toilet seat, and you're going in a bucket. Now that doesn't sound attractive, but the bucket has a thick layer of, say, sawdust or any type of other carbon-type material in it. You do your business, then you cover it up with some more carbon, or, say, sawdust in this example. You don't smell anything. It's perfectly clean. We've got a little hand-washing station in there with a little foot pump. It's great.
Yeah.
And, that is a great way. For example, if we have a large workshop and we don't want to overwhelm our septic system,
welcome to our workshop.
You can use a nice, rustic, dry composting toilet.
Yeah, well, and you get kind of the experience, okay, this isn't so bad after all. Because honestly, the first time I heard dry composting toilet, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Why would I do that? But, after seeing it, I'm like, okay, I've gone in outhouses and that's miserable. This really isn't miserable.
No, not at all. So it's great. So there, it's an emergency toilet. It's a toilet used for if we have lots of people out here, which, you know, a lot of times we do.
Yeah.
It's great for if you're working outside. Yeah. I mean, there's many, many different functions for the dry composting toilet.
Yeah.
Most of which is poop.
Poop.
Yeah. It's also a resource. But yes. We'll talk about that another time. And then on the other side of this is our solar shower. Mm-hmm. So our solar shower is great. You know, we use the power of the sun, heat, water, very simple, but nice.
Mm-hmm.
We literally put in a shower insert in there. It's not just putting a hose over your head in a box.
No. And we have a bench and shelves. So we can have towels and soap and, you know, we're going to have shower curtain.
Nice warm water. Yeah. And, you know, it's water heated by
the sun.
And we have, just like everything else we do, we have multiple ways to feed it. So rainwater collection and also our well. So we can fill up the receptacle or the tank, but not have to use electricity to heat it. We use the sun to heat it.
Right.
So that's a great savings right there. And it's kind of neat. I mean, you know, you get to shower outside. Of course, it's private and all of that. But it's a good addition.
Yeah. This will obviously be seasonal unless we lose all electricity and everything goes bad. And then, we'll probably heat up some water on a wood stove and dump it in the tank.
Right. Sure. And then, you know, again, so why the solar shower? Yes, there's savings on money.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's saving on electricity if you want to minimize your electricity use. Yes, it reduces pressure on the septic system, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. There's multiple reasons for it. And, you know, we've a lot of people in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's another shower.
Yep.
And I personally like taking a shower out there. It's good.
I haven't done it yet. I will.
Yep. Okay. Here's another point that's really important. And we wrote down here, winding down on projects. What do we mean by that?
Well, it's just that we're getting to the end of the primary summer season where we've just had project after project after project starting. And now we're kind of closing that season down, coming into fall where we'll be focusing more on maintenance and
tidying up those projects.
Yes, finishing them up.
And like, for example, we just made a tweak to one of our rainwater collection systems. Yeah, we realized, you know what, we're not getting everything out of it. We should be collecting more water off of that based on the square footage of the catchment, and we're not. So we did some troubleshooting.
Yeah.
And actually, Isaac did the troubleshooting and fixed a couple of problems. And once it rains again, if it ever does,
we'll be able to tell.
We'll be able to tell. And actually, it's supposed to rain this weekend, so pray for that.
That would be great.
Yep. And then, you know, we still have some tweaks to do to this structure with the dry composting toilet and the solar shower. So, you know, we're still working on completing that, you know, cleaning it up, making it nice. And then, like you said, a maintenance phase.
Yeah. Just, you know, going through and, you know, as we get closer to fall and winter, now we're going to start doing major butchering in the fall. So that's going to keep us a lot more busy.
Yeah.
And harvesting the rest of our garden and getting things canned. And so that's, it's just kind of closing out the project phase and moving into the maintenance and processing and canning phase.
Right. So food preservation phase almost.
Yeah.
And then that's a great point. Yeah. We have a lot of processing to do.
Yeah. We've got a lot of chickens.
Over 100 anyway, chickens. We have more ducks. Turkey, single.
Rabbits,
he'll go
obviously.
Right before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And then hopefully when, you know.
Sheep, goats.
Sheep and goats, pigs. Yeah. And pigs.
Yeah.
We have a lot of processing, and we might need to buy another freezer. But then we, you know, hopefully as deer season opens, we'll get a couple of deer this year.
Yes.
So we'll have some venison.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, big shift. So yeah, so it's going to be a hunting and gathering phase.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Other than that, we have, we've had some births. We certainly had some births.
Yes. Well, rabbits. In the beginning of July, two of our does had babies. I want to say, well, one of them had two little doelings, and then one of them had one buckling. So we have a total of
nine goats and...
No, wait, but babies.
Oh, babies. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Six babies out there. They're, you know, a couple of months apart, but... Still six babies.
Yep, and we'll probably sell a couple.
Baby goats. Yeah.
And, you know, some will be for butcher. Mm-hmm. Some are going to take over as breeding stock.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we've got to make those decisions coming up.
Yeah.
And same with the sheep.
Sheep, yeah, we have some baby sheep, too, and they're growing quick.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to be decreasing our herd a little bit as we move into the winter, partly for the meat, but partly... Also, because we have to
winter over your animals, and obviously you lose the pasture and the grass based diet, and they're still going to get grass. It's just going to get in the form of hay.
And then within the space in the barn and the amount of animals that are kind of, you know, being together, because that increases disease and worms and those types of things. So decreasing the herd makes sense over the winter.
And historically, this is very, very normal. Mm-hmm. Is to, you know, to basically run your homestead or farm or whatever seasonally. Just like, you know, before the age of modern agriculture and shipping, which isn't all necessarily a good thing, is, you know, we're so used to getting any kind of food we want any time of the year. Most people ate seasonally.
Yeah.
You know, whatever was in the season is what you were eating. And then, of course, you preserve what you need for winter. And it's the same thing with animals. You know, we need to cull our flocks and herds and be able to overwinter them without breaking the bank.
Yeah, this is totally off subject. But one of the beauties of eating in season is that you end up eating a very varied diet. I mean, you know, nowadays, since... people will get stuck. They say, I only eat grapes and apples, or I only eat apples and bananas. Well, if you ate seasonally, you would have a much greater variety
of
food that you'd be eating.
So a greater diversity of nutrients and minerals and all that too, as well.
Just be a lot healthier.
Yeah.
Anyway, and, that's a different subject too.
Yeah. Okay, so why don't we close out our verse for today is Romans 8:28. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good. For those who are called according to his purpose. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.